Okay, so like we promised, it's time to really dig into the counselor's code of ethics. We had so many questions from you all about it, so we're really going to try to get into the nitty-gritty here.
Yeah, it's something that comes up a lot, in the field, obviously.
Absolutely. I mean, you're dealing with people's deepest, darkest secrets, right?
Right.
So, to help us unpack all of this, we're turning to another training session led by Dr. Pam, the licensed counselor we've mentioned before.
Yeah, I remember her.
She's got this really engaging way of explaining things, makes it kind of hard to forget, which is perfect for a deep dive like this.
Right, you need those catchy examples sometime.
Exactly. So she starts off by talking about confidentiality, which is like the cornerstone of therapy.
Oh, absolutely. You can't really have a therapeutic relationship without that foundation of trust.
Right. Like, who would open up if they thought their secrets were going to be spilled all over town? And she actually has this hilarious saying about it. She's like,
Uh-oh.
if you've seen him naked, you can't treat him.
That's Dr. Pam for you, straight to the point.
Right. But it really drives home the point about boundaries, especially with like family
Oh,
members.
yeah, that's a big no-no, ethically speaking.
Like, imagine trying to be objective with your Aunt Carol on the couch after you've seen her Christmas sweater collection,
Right, it'd be impossible. You'd be bringing all sorts of preconceived notions and biases to the table.
Exactly. And that's where confidentiality gets tricky because, as important as it is, there are exceptions, right?
Yeah, and those exceptions usually revolve around safety.
Safety of the client or of others.
Both, potentially.
Yeah.
It's this whole concept of serious and foreseeable harm.
Ooh, yeah. She gave this really intense example.
Like what?
Imagine a client walks in still wearing like bloody clothes.
Well.
And admits to killing their spouse like the day before.
Okay, that's intense.
I talk about a gut-wrenching scenario.
It really makes you think about the weight of those ethical decisions, right?
Because you have this horrific crime, but you also have this person seeking help. So where does the counselor's duty lie?
Yeah, it's a tough one, for sure.
It's not about playing judge and jury. What?
Exactly. It's about public safety in that moment, not punishment for past actions.
So in that situation, unless the client was like, and now I'm going to go after their brother, the counselor would still be bound by confidentiality, I would
Right,
think.
that's the ethical guideline, although I'm sure it can be tough to swallow in a situation like that.
Oh, absolutely. And then she brought up another tough one, what she calls the gun in the car scenario.
Oh boy.
Yeah, like talk about duty to warn,
Yeah,
right?
that's a classic example where you can't just sit on that information.
Like, oh, by the way, I have a gun in my car and I might use it on someone. You'd have to do something. I don't know.
Absolutely, you'd have a responsibility to take steps to ensure everyone's safety, including the clients.
So, like, call the police or warn the person they're talking about.
It can get complicated because it really depends on the specific laws in your state.
So, it's not a one-size-fits-all kind of thing.
No, not at all. Some states might require you to directly warn the potential victim, while others might say you need to report it to law enforcement.
So you really have to know your stuff, or you could end up in hot water yourself.
Exactly. And that's just scratching the surface of the ethical dilemmas that come up.
Right, because then there's the whole business side of
Oh,
things.
yeah, don't even get me started on billing and insurance.
That's a whole other can of worms. But even something as simple as like payment for services can get complicated, right?
Oh, absolutely. And Dr. Pam actually gave this great analogy, comparing it to going to the doctor.
Okay, I can see that.
Like, you go to your appointment, you get a bill,
Yeah.
and sometimes insurance is involved, right?
Right.
But what happens when you bring a third party into the mix, like an insurance company?
Ooh, yeah, because they want to know what they're paying for, right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And not everyone is comfortable with their insurance company knowing every detail of their therapy sessions.
Right. It's like, hey, that's between me and my therapist. Thank you very much.
Right, and that's where informed consent becomes so important.
Like making sure the client understands what information might be shared.
Exactly, they need to know what they're signing up for.
And sometimes things can get even weirder, like with bartering for services.
Bartering, like what, trading chickens for therapy sessions?
Well, Dr. Pam did mention a client who offered to pay with chickens once.
Seriously.
Yeah, apparently it's more common than you might think, especially in areas where resources are limited.
Wow, I guess that makes sense, but still.
Right, like where do you even draw the line? A dozen eggs for an hour of therapy.
It really makes you think about the value of our work, doesn't it? But also the potential for exploitation, right?
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want someone taking advantage of a client in a vulnerable position.
Exactly. It's about maintaining those professional boundaries, no matter what form of payment is involved.
Right, like, sorry, I can't accept livestock as payment, but I do take Venmo.
Exactly. And that's not just about bartering either. There's also the whole issue of client access to their records.
Oh, yeah, that's a tricky one.
It could be like a tug of war sometimes, with the client wanting access to what they see as their information.
Right.
And the therapist needing to protect the confidentiality of those records.
So, like, who owns those records anyway?
Well, technically, the physical records belong to the therapist or the agency.
Okay.
But the information within them belongs to the client.
So it's kind of like you can stay at the hotel, but you can't, like, take the towels with you.
Exactly. You can see what's in your file, but you can't walk away with the whole thing.
Okay, that makes sense. So the client can request to see their file, but the therapist can say no in certain situations, right?
Right. There are some exceptions, even if the law allows for it.
Like what?
Well, for example, if the therapist believes that releasing the information could be harmful to the client.
Harmful how?
Like if there's something in there that might trigger self-harm, or if it contains sensitive information about someone else who hasn't consented to disclosure.
So it's about protecting everyone involved.
Exactly. It's about being a responsible steward of that information and using professional judgment to determine what's in everyone's best interest.
Right. It's not just about handing over a stack of papers. It's about making sure the client is equipped to handle that information.
Exactly. And that actually reminds me of another area where things can get tricky.
Which is?
The counselor's own online presence.
Ah, yeah. Social media can be a minefield.
Tell me about it. We're all on it these days. But how do you reconcile that with maintaining those professional boundaries?
Right. You can't exactly have a therapist's gone wild Instagram account.
Exactly. It's about being mindful of how our online presence might be perceived by clients and colleagues.
Right. You don't want your clients stumbling across your wild spring break photos.
Exactly. It's all about maintaining that professional image and avoiding those dual relationships.
It's like that saying, don't mix business with pleasure. But in the therapy world,
right.
It's more like don't mix your personal life with your professional life, especially online.
Words to live by. And, you know, this whole conversation about boundaries and self-care, it makes me think about the counselor's own well-being.
Right, because you can't pour from an empty cup, as they say.
Exactly. Burnout is a real issue in the helping professions, and it's impossible to be an ethical and effective therapist if you're running on fumes.
So how do you make sure your cup is full? What are some practical steps counselors can take to prioritize their own well-being?
Well, I think it starts with recognizing that self-care is not selfish. It's essential.
Okay, yeah. It's easy to say that, but how do you actually make time for it when you're juggling clients and paperwork and all the other demands of the job?
You're right. It's not always easy, but it has to be a non-negotiable, like putting it in your schedule and treating it as important as any client appointment.
So like actually blocking out time for yourself, even if it's just for an hour or two.
Exactly. Whether it's going for a run, getting a massage, or just curling up with a good book, whatever helps you recharge.
And I imagine it's also about being aware of those early warning signs of burnout, right?
Oh, absolutely. You have to be able to recognize those red flags in yourself.
Which are?
Things like feeling cynical or detached from your work, having trouble sleeping, being more irritable than usual. Those are all signs that you might be pushing yourself too hard.
So what do you do if you start noticing those signs?
Well, the first step is to acknowledge that you need to slow down and take care of yourself.
Easier said than done sometimes.
It is. But it might mean cutting back on your caseload, taking a vacation, or even just talking to someone about how you're feeling.
Like a therapist.
Even therapists need therapists.
Yeah.
It's important to remember that we're not immune to burnout or compassion fatigue.
And there's no shame in asking for help, right?
Yeah. None whatsoever. In fact, it's a sign of strength and self-awareness, and it allows us to be more present and effective for our clients.
It's like they say, you can't pour from an empty cup.
Exactly. And when we model healthy self-care practices for our clients, we're also giving them permission to do the same.
It's like a ripple effect, taking care of ourselves so we can better care for others.
I love that analogy. And, you know, speaking of taking care of others, there's another aspect of ethical practice that I think is so important.
I too.
Recognizing our own limitations and knowing when to refer a client to someone else.
You mean like when you're not the right fit for them or if they need a different type of therapy than what you offer?
Exactly. We have an ethical obligation to practice within our scope of competence. And that means being honest with ourselves about what we can and cannot handle.
So it's about putting the client's needs first, even if it means admitting that you're not the best person for the job.
Precisely. And that can be tough for some therapists, especially those who are new to the field or who have a hard time saying no.
Right, because you want to help everyone, but you also have to be realistic about your own capabilities.
Exactly. And sometimes the most ethical thing we can do is to connect a client with someone who is better equipped to meet their specific needs.
Makes sense. So it's not just about being a good therapist, it's about being a good steward of the profession as a whole.
Exactly. And part of that stewardship involves upholding those ethical standards, not just in our individual practices, but also in how we interact with colleagues and the public.
So, like, being a good role model for other therapists and for the community at large.
Precisely. And that includes things like maintaining professional boundaries, respecting confidentiality, and being accountable for our actions.
And what happens if you see a colleague doing something unethical? Like, what's the protocol there?
That's a great question, and it can be a really tough situation to navigate. The first step is to try to address the issue directly with the colleague, if you feel comfortable doing so.
Okay.
But if that doesn't feel safe or appropriate, or if the behavior doesn't change, then you might need to take it a step further.
Like reporting it to a licensing board or ethics committee.
Exactly. And that can be a really daunting prospect. But it's important to remember that we have a responsibility to protect the public and to uphold the integrity of our profession.
So it's about putting those ethical principles above personal loyalties or fears of retaliation.
Exactly. And I know that can be a lot to ask, but it's what separates a true professional from someone who's just in it for themselves.
Right, because at the end of the day, it's about doing what's right for the client and for the profession as a whole.
Absolutely. And that brings up another important point, which is the ethical considerations around handling client records, especially after a client passes away.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's something I hadn't even thought about.
It's not something we like to dwell on, but it's something that every therapist will likely encounter at some point in their career.
So what happens to those records? Do they just become part of the therapist's files?
It's a bit more complicated than that. Legally, the records still belong to the therapist or agency, but the client's right to confidentiality extends even after death.
Okay, so their secrets are still safe, even if they're not around to protect them.
Exactly. Unless there's a legal requirement to disclose the information, like a court order, those records should remain confidential.
That makes sense. And speaking of court orders, what happens if a therapist gets subpoenaed to testify in a case involving a client?
Oh, that's a whole other ethical minefield. You're caught between your legal obligation to comply with the court and your ethical obligation to protect your client's privacy.
So what do you do?
Well, the first thing is to consult with an attorney who specializes in these types of cases.
Okay, so don't just try to wing it.
Definitely not. You need to understand your rights and responsibilities, and you need to know how to advocate for your client's best interests within the bounds of the law.
And sometimes that means fighting to keep those therapy records confidential, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a delicate balance between cooperating with the legal system and upholding your ethical obligations.
And let's not forget about technology, which has thrown a whole new wrench into the works when it comes to ethics.
Oh, absolutely. Telehealth, online counseling platforms, social media, they've all created new challenges and opportunities for both ethical and unethical behavior.
Right, because it's like, how do you maintain those professional boundaries when you're just a click away from your clients 24/7?
Exactly. And how do you ensure the confidentiality of those online communications?
And what about all the data privacy issues? It's a lot to navigate.
It really is. And it's our responsibility as ethical practitioners to stay informed about these evolving technologies and to adapt our practices accordingly.
So we're not just blindly stumbling into the digital age. We're doing so with our eyes wide open and our ethical compasses firmly in hand.
Exactly. And that means being extra cautious about our own online presence and how it might be perceived by clients, colleagues, and the public.
Right, because a therapist's online persona is an extension of their professional identity.
Exactly. So no posting those drunken karaoke videos on Facebook, no matter how epic they might seem at the time.
Probably a good rule of thumb for everyone, not just therapists.
You're not wrong. But seriously, it's about maintaining that professional image and avoiding those dual relationships that can compromise our ethical obligations.
Right, because a therapist is always a therapist, even in the digital world.
Exactly. And that brings us back to the importance of self-care and recognizing that our own well-being is essential to providing ethical and effective care.
Because a burnt-out therapist is not doing anyone any good, least of all themselves.
Exactly. So we need to make sure we're taking care of our own mental and emotional health so we can be fully present and available for our clients.
And sometimes that means setting some boundaries, saying no, and prioritizing our own needs.
Absolutely. It's not selfish. It's self-preservation.
It's not always easy to do, though, is it? Like, practically speaking, how do you prioritize your needs when you've got a million things on your plate?
Well, I think it takes practice, and it might look different for everyone.
Okay.
But for me, it's about being really intentional about carving out time for myself, even when it feels like there's no time to spare.
So, like, literally scheduling it in.
Exactly. Treating that yoga class or therapy appointment or whatever it is with the same importance as any other commitment.
And being really strict with yourself about keeping those appointments.
Absolutely.
Right.
Because if you don't prioritize your own well-being, no one else will.
Right. You can't expect your clients to show up for themselves if you're not showing up for yourself.
Exactly. And part of that is also recognizing those early warning signs of burnout before it gets to the point where you're running on fumes.
Which can be tough because as helpers, we're so used to putting others first.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to remember that we can't pour from an empty cup.
Right. Like if we're not taking care of ourselves, we're not going to be any good to anyone else.
Exactly. So it's crucial to be aware of those red flags, those signs that you might be heading towards burnout.
Those are
things like feeling cynical or detached from your work, having trouble sleeping, being more irritable than usual. Those are all signs that you might need to slow down and recharge.
So what do you do if you start noticing those signs in yourself?
Well, I think the first step is just to acknowledge them to yourself, to say, hey, I'm feeling burnt out. I need to do something about this.
Oh.
And then it's about taking action, whether that's talking to a supervisor or a colleague or seeking out therapy yourself.
Because even therapists need therapy, right?
Absolutely. We're not immune to the stresses and challenges of life, and sometimes we need a little extra support to navigate those challenges.
And there's no shame in asking for help. In fact, it's a sign of strength and self-awareness.
Exactly. And when we model that for our clients, when we show them that it's okay to ask for help, we're giving them permission to do the same.
It's like we're saying, hey, it's okay to not be okay, and it's okay to reach out for support when you need it.
Exactly. And that, I think, is at the heart of ethical practice. It's about recognizing our shared humanity and our responsibility to show up as our best selves for the sake of our clients and for the integrity of our profession.
And sometimes showing up as our best selves means setting boundaries, taking breaks, and prioritizing our own well-being.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, we can't pour from an empty cup.
So true. Well, I think that's a great place to wrap up this deep dive, don't you?
It really is.
We've covered so much ground today, from confidentiality and duty to warn to the ethics of technology and self-care.
A lot to digest.
It really is. But it's also important for ensuring that we're providing ethical and responsible care to our clients.
Absolutely. Because at the end of the day, our ethical obligations are what guide us in making those tough decisions and navigating those gray areas.
And it's an ongoing process, right? Like, we never stop learning and growing as ethical practitioners.
Exactly. And we need to be willing to challenge ourselves and each other to keep striving for that higher standard.
Because it's not just about following the rules. It's about bringing our hearts and our minds and our deepest values to the table every single day.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
And on that note, I want to thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the Counselor's Code of Ethics.
It's been a pleasure.
And to all our listeners out there, remember, you're not alone in this journey. We're all in this together.
Absolutely. And if you're ever facing an ethical dilemma, don't hesitate to reach out for support, whether it's from a supervisor, a colleague, or an ethics consultant.
Because as we've learned today, self-care and consultation are not signs of weakness. They're signs of strength and integrity.
Couldn't agree more.
So until next time, stay curious, stay ethical, and as always, take care of yourselves and each other.